Hello and welcome to Mundo Albiceleste podcast. We are more than 2 months away from our next World Cup qualifying match, and that's when we always record our podcast. But we like it so much that we decided to record it today anyway. So, as always, I'm with John in Malaysia. Hello, John.
Hello, Seban. Hello to everyone there. It's great to be back doing this podcast again. Of course, we don't have any Argentina match at the moment, but, you know, in football, there's always a lot of things to talk about. And we have a special guest with us for this episode, all the way from Stockholm, Sweden, a friend from the enemy side. I'd like to introduce Rafael. Hi, Rafael.
Hi, John. Hi, Seba. And hello, everyone. All Mundo Celeste fans. It's a pleasure to be part of this podcast again with this view from the enemy.
Yeah, we're not very busy on the Argentine front, but I guess you cannot say the same. Brazil is in the middle of the Confederation Cup. We are recording this before they take on South Africa in one of the semifinal matches. And what is your view on the recent results and performances from Brazil? Should we, as Argentina fans, should we start getting worried about the game in September?
Nah, I don't think. I mean, not especially because Brazil is playing a better football now, but because it's always a tough match. But well, this to be honest, I'm quite surprised. I don't think many people are expecting Dunga seem to be playing such a good football. That was not what was happening recently. So it was really a surprise. I mean, of course, it started a bit, well, the first match against Egypt, first 45 minutes, a good football. And then, well, second half was a bit crazy match. And then Egypt scored 2 goals in less than 2 minutes. And then Brazil managed to win the match with a penalty in the, well, last minute of the match. And then a great match against US, but still in Brazil, sometimes people... Well, even though they played well against U.S., there's always that feeling that, okay, but that was United States. They have improved a lot. It's a much better team, but still, we want to see how it's going to be against a much more traditional side. And that was, again, a fantastic performance against Italy. It's I think Dunga found... During the competition, that's probably one reason why competitions like that are good, because you have to find solutions immediately. And then I think he found one with Ramírez. He's played a really good football. And there are, of course, still problems. We can discuss this later on. The way Brazil play, Brazil now plays much more in counterattacks. And of course, when... it's not always that it's possible to play like that, so it's important to score first, of course, to be able to use the counterattacks. So and still, well, the left back and the defensive midfielders, there are some problems there, but still, well, comparing to maybe the situation in Argentina right now, of course, Brazil, it's Dunga is for sure in a much better moment, and at least. Right now, as you said, we are talking about this before Brazil plays against South Africa. So until that, after that match or after the match, if Brazil goes to final and plays against Spain, then and if Brazil loses, then of course Dunga will be criticized again. But still, I think he has found some solutions to some problems that he had, and maybe Diego. Still has a lot of problems in Argentina that he needs to know.
Yeah, well, one of the things I wanted to ask you that because you know it better than we could know it from the outside is whether the public opinion has changed with Dunga, whether they like him a little bit more than before. Because I remember I used to live in Brazil and in Rio de Janeiro, and I know that everybody was against Dunga's appointment and they didn't like the style they were playing. But then results started to go Dunga's way and He won the Copa America against Argentina, and he got a lot of credit after that. And but still, then Brazil had a couple, or maybe correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was like three consecutive 0-0 draws at home during the World Cup qualifiers,
yes.
Including a 0-0 against Bolivia, and so pressure was again piling up on him. But did that change? Do you think the press is now a little bit different with their relationship with Dunga, or the fans in general?
I think it takes time. I mean, if Brazil wins the Confederations Cup and then playing good football, then Dunga will get for sure some credits, and they'll be deserved, in fact. And I think the problem was the whole thing started when after he won Copa America, and still he didn't know how to express himself after winning that competition. It was a tough competition. Brazil started playing bad football, lost to Mexico, but in the end they managed to win, and they beat Argentina in the final. A great performance, and still. After that, he was complaining. He was talking to people like, look, who's going to say, do you want to complain about this team now? What about this now? So, a bit. And then it's not a good attitude towards the media because, of course, I mean, of course, there are some pundits, experts, that they want to always have their view and they want their team to play. But it's never good to if you fight, or if you try to all the time complain about what people are writing about you or talking about your team, and that's the problem with Dunga. I think you can say that there are a lot of people that you can consider they are bad losers, and Dunga is a bad winner. I mean, he doesn't know how to express himself when he wins, and then he could just do like Parreira, I think, the manager that took Brazil to the when Brazil won the World Cup in 1994. I mean, he was heavily criticized, but then after he won the World Cup, he just said, okay, I'm fine. Probably he was not fine. He wanted to say a lot of things, but he didn't. He was like, okay, where's the guy that wanted to complain about me? I won the World Cup, so there's nothing you can say about it. And that's the problem with Dunga. I mean, let's see if Brazil wins the Confederations Cup. So it would be nice to see if he, he can just, talk to people, say, I hope people are glad now. They saw some good football and things like that. Don't instead of, where are the ones that were criticizing me? And this kind of attitude that doesn't help at all in Brazil. And of course, I mean, that's a lot of people said it's a. Probably an old saying in Brazil, that's the toughest job in the country. That's to be the national team manager. And then, and of course, there will always be some people that are annoyed or criticizing heavily the Dunga or whoever sits in that position. But I hope to see a different attitude from him. And I hope to see Brazil win, of course. But then I hope to see it as a different attitude from Dunga as well.
Well, yeah, the way I see it, he's a manager that relies a lot on the results, and he could be a victim of that, because whenever results don't go his way, he won't be able to defend himself by saying, oh yeah, well, we lost, but we play beautiful football, because he doesn't care about that. So he doesn't have a defense when a result doesn't go his way. So that's where I see a problem. Could be just waiting to happen in the future. Just when with one result not going his way, he could have another problem with the press, and that could create some kind of crisis. But it's not happening at the moment, and he's right to say that he's doing a good job if he wants to, because if he relies on results, well, he's getting the results. So
yeah, I mean, Brazil, it's leading the qualifying, and probably with 3 points more, and they already qualified to the World Cup, and then of course, and then comes the Confederations Cup. But the problem is that or I mean, to one another thing about Dunga is that after the Olympics, when Brazil lost to Argentina, and then many people said, okay, he's crazy, he shouldn't be there. I mean, he could have used anyone else, Jorginho, that's his assistant, or some under 23 national team coach or something like that. But he decided to go, and then he had a lot to lose there and very few to win. I mean, everybody knew that, okay, if he doesn't come home with the gold medal, then, you know, he'll probably lose his job. And then it almost happened. And then what happened was that what happens with Dunga is that he managed some very important results, either in the qualifying or even if it's in a friendly match against a tough opponent. Then like when Brazil beat Portugal 6-2, that was still was just a friendly match, but was a very impressive result. And then these kind of things that, you know, that match when Portugal scored 1-0, people were celebrating because, okay, now we got rid of Dunga. And then Brazil got a fantastic comeback and beat Portugal 6-2. And then people were happy as well because, okay, we are happy because Brazil played a good football. So there are these mixed feelings about Dunga. And you're right to say that because he relies so much in results.
Yeah, and same thing is happening with Argentina, John. Do you think so? Because a lot of people are starting to say that Maradona shouldn't be our manager and he should be resigning or fired by the AFA. So what do you see? How do you see it, John? Do you think we can compare one situation with another, one manager with the other?
Well, I can say that in football, there are always two types of fans. One, the kind of fans that will look at the game on an overall basis, and the other one will just look at the results. And I think those fans which look at the results, you know, when things don't go, you know, according to your way, they start to criticize. You know, there's always these negative comments that are coming out here and there. I think, you know, in my opinion, well, I'm not going to defend Diego because it is obvious that things are not going well for Argentina right now. But I don't think it's a good idea for us to say that we must sack the coach, you know, and get someone else to come in. I mean, we are almost like 1 year away from the World Cup. You know, the most important thing is let him do his job, let him get us there first, and then we'll see how things goes on.
And what if he doesn't get us there? Well, I think we will all agree that he shouldn't continue being the coach. But at the same time, we should always remember that out of the 14 matches that have been played so far, he was only there for 4 matches. And again, I might sound repetitive here, but 2 of them were in the altitude, where not even Brazil gets results. So I think we should support Diego and continue having faith in him. Even though we know he's not a proven manager and he doesn't have a lot of experience, but he's the one in charge now, and we should all be supporting the man. How do you see it, Rafael? Do you give us your view from the enemy's point of view?
Well, to be honest, one thing that I watched, I didn't watch Argentina Colombia, but I watched Argentina Ecuador, and I think they started playing quite well until Tevez missed the penalty. And but I think they're overall watching the whole match, I think it looks like they were playing a better football before. I think in the first Diego's first matches, I mean the match against France, and then when by the way they played in the same style of counter attack that Brazil is doing right now, and they got a fantastic result, and I don't know, it looks like I don't know what you guys think, but for me it's like, well, it has to do with the results as well. It has to do with confidence, but it looks like they're not improving at all. Things are getting a bit worse. And then it's also, it has to do with maybe many things, that the way Lionel Messi plays, probably, of course, it's always a tough question that, what, you know, it happens in Sweden when people talk about Zlatan Ibrahimovic, that he plays in one way in Inter Milan and a different way in the national team. Brazil, you know, when Ronaldinho was at his best, people discussed the same. And the same in Portugal with Cristiano Ronaldo. Oh, he plays much better for Manchester United than the national team. I don't know what the problem is. I mean, here, at least in Sweden, people can say, like, okay, of course, because they're there in his club, he has much better teammates than in the national team. That's not the case in Argentina. So I think it's there are some questions that are up to Diego to sort out. And the fact that, okay, he was not playing with Aguero this time, but Aguero didn't have the end of his season there in Atletico Madrid was not the best either. And I spoke to some Argentinian journalists when I was watching this match. And then they also said that, well, some people question, you know, the relation that Maradona has with Aguero, the fact that he somehow tried to play some role, making him move from Atletico de Madrid, and these kind of things are not good. I mean, if it's true, I mean, he should have some kind of maybe advisor. Where is Menotti? Bilardo right now. I mean, he should be there, someone that he could rely on and give him some advice.
And before we move on and we talk about Argentina and Brazil, the upcoming big South American derby match in September, I wanted to ask Rafael, since we have him here, whether he could tell us something about Brazil's performance in Ecuador. And because now everybody is talking about Brazil being the team to beat and probably a favorite for the next year World Cup. But not a lot of people remember that they struggle a lot playing at Ecuador in the altitude. And what is your comparison between what Argentina did in Ecuador and what Brazil did?
Talking about Brazil against Ecuador, I think we can say that Brazil went back home with 1 point from that match due to some factors. One of them was Julio Cesar, probably the best goalkeeper in the world right now. And, luck as well. But I don't know. I think there are two different things in football. Is that if to play well, or to play a good or a bad match. And also, it's not necessarily like you deserve or not the result. Because you can also see that Ecuador, they had too many chances and they were not able to score more than one goal. And then Brazil had just one or two chances, and then they managed to score the goal. And then Ecuador had the same problem in their following match against Paraguay. They were leading, and then Paraguay managed to score in the additional time. So it's also a problem that they have there. And of course, all teams that go there, they suffer because of the altitude. That's a fact. Ecuador didn't qualify for the World Cup before because they were not playing. They used to play in Guayaquil with the altitude. And of course, it has a lot to do with their improvements. Not just that, they have a good team as well. They went to the World Cup. They managed to beat Poland. They qualified for the second round. But still, it has a lot to do with that. I mean, the teams, if Brazil or Ecuador in a different way that they would have done it in anywhere else in the world. And then, of course, it affects. But maybe that's that. I think comparing to Argentina, for instance, when they played against Bolivia, then it looked like they had just okay, it's Bolivia, we're gonna beat them here or whatever, and they suffer with the altitude. Then you have to change a bit the way you play. And I think the difference is that probably Brazil knew of that. They had Dunga had this plan. Okay, that if we are lucky, we go home with 1 point here. And then what's the difference? And Argentina, once again, they start quite well. I think you guys have discussed that. And then for me, just the only thing is that they seem to suffer a lot when they are one goal down. It looks like they don't know how to react. And it's one pure play the altitude, because then it gets even harder.
Okay, now let's move on to the actual game that we are all looking forward to in September. And in my opinion, I do believe that this has to be the biggest match in international football. Maybe it's Germany-Holland, but I think there's no bigger game in international football when it comes to El Clásico between Argentina and Brazil. And we have been hearing a lot of rumors regarding the venue of choice that this match is going to be played. Perhaps, Seba, you may want to share with us a little bit on that.
Yeah, well, the latest I heard was that the game will be played at the Monumental, the same venue where we played all the matches for as long as I can remember. Apparently, the game will go on at River Plate only because the financial aspect of the deal. Because, you know, they have a lot of tickets allocated to sponsors and corporate seats and stuff like that. And apparently, Rosario will not be ready to host this game between Argentina and Brazil in September. They say that maybe the second from last fixture, which is going to be against Peru at home, apparently that will be played in Rosario. There were rumors also of La Bombonera, the mythical Boca Juniors stadium, being also a candidate for this game against Brazil, but I don't know whether those rumors are going to have some substance behind or not. So I believe the game is going to be played in River Plate. But my question here would be, is it the same for Brazil to play it at any venue? Because the feeling behind this reasoning of moving or probably moving this game to Rosario was to play it at the stadium where the fans are closer to the pitch, where the atmosphere is louder and the opposition can feel the pressure. But do you think Brazilians will be worried about this? Would it be the same for them to play at River Plate or Rosario or La Bombonera?
So I'm sure that if Brazil and Argentina played in La Bombonera, people would make a big thing about it in Brazil, because they would say that's not an appropriated venue for them. Some Brazilian clubs had problems before playing there. The fans are too close. But it's not that the fact that they are too close and it puts that much pressure. It's just that, you know much better than me and John, that yeah, it's very, very close there in La Bombonera. So I think the Monumental, that's probably something that you discussed it before. So some problems with Diego and the River Plate, or the fact that to say to call the fans to get more support. But I mean, Argentina has Argentina won a World Cup, in fact, and playing in the same venue there in Monumental. So and for sure it's going to be a problem for the Brazilian team, because I'm not sure. I think it was some 15 years ago that Brazil beat Argentina. It was in the Monumental, by the way, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah,
and
it was a friendly match.
But
it was a friendly match, and Donizetti scored the only goal of the game.
Yes,
I remember. 93 or 95, one of those years. But yeah,
I think it was 95. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the last time Brazil won at the Monumental in Argentina. Yeah, well, the statistics are quite friendly to Argentina when it comes to playing in World Cup qualifiers. We only lost once, and it was that famous 5-0 defeat to against Colombia. We're hoping for that result not to repeat in September, of course. We will be facing opposition dressed in yellow, but I'm hoping it's going to be different than last time. So we don't have a lot of information regarding the squad list and stuff like that. So we'll keep that for a future edition of our podcast. So now I think it's time for us maybe to, now that we are the three of us together here, maybe we can talk about our favorite memories from this Clásico between Argentina and Brazil. And I'll start by asking John about his favorite memory involving Brazil and Argentina.
Well, my first match that I remember watching Argentina versus Brazil was probably in 1990 during the World Cup. The most favorite one has to be in the 97 World Youth Cup, which was held in Malaysia. And I remember what is it like facing all the Brazilian fans in my school, you know, telling me that you guys are going down, you guys are going to lose. And because, you know, Brazil was on fire at that time. And Argentina, I think we surprisingly lost to Australia. So, yeah, there was a bit of doubt there. But, hey, memory on the pitch. I guess off the pitch, I would say it has to be the 95 Copa America in the quarterfinal there. I remember Argentina screwing up against USA in the group game, and as a result, we were forced to play Brazil. It was during a weekday, and I did woke up as usual, prepared myself, but I never actually reached school. And I made some excuse. I came back home and told my dad that this happened, and that's why I couldn't make it to school. And I was surprised that he said, "Okay, come in and watch." I can see it in his eyes that he knows this bugger. He came back just to watch the game. So that was probably my best memory off the pitch.
and yeah, my favorite memory, and you mentioned the game, it has to be the World Cup in Italy in 1990. I was 13 at the time, and I was watching with almost my entire family, and I remember that has to be the most unfair result in the history of football, and Brazil should have won 4-0, 5-0, I don't know. They were hitting the post, they were hitting the bar, they were hitting both posts in the same play. I remember there was a striker called Müller playing for Brazil, and he missed so many opportunities. And then one uncle he told me, okay, if they didn't score that chance, because it was a golden chance that Müller missed, he said, if they don't score that one, well, we're going to win this. I don't know how, but we're going to win this. And then Diego gets the ball just before the halfway line. And like a magnet, he attracts like four or five Brazilian defenders. They completely forgot about Caniggia. And then he plays the pass with his right towards Caniggia, who easily rounded up Tafarel to score with the left foot, and to send Argentina through to the quarterfinals. I that was a magical moment, and I'll never forget that moment. It was very emotional. I remember I was crying after the game. It was sensational. And second on the list will be the Olympics, because I was happy. I was lucky enough to be in Beijing, and we won 3-0 when I was hoping for the worst, not hoping for the best, but fearing for the worst. And we were lucky enough to win 3-0 after a very closed first half, and that's another happy memory for me. What are your happy memories? I will talk about the worst memory that I have between Argentina and Brazil after you mention yours, Rafa.
Okay, well, I think you guys have mentioned the worst. Caniggia, of course, that was terrible. And but I mean, that's a good example. Like when I talked about Brazil and Ecuador, well, I mean, sometimes in football you miss the chances, you got what you deserve. And Brazil was the manager back then, Lazzaroni, Sebastião Lazzaroni. He was criticized for not playing attractive and attacking football. And then when he finally managed to do that, that was exactly the match against Argentina. And that's when Brazil lost. Trust me, I can't forget that match either. But I'm not that old, but my first memory from a Brazil-Argentina match was 1982, in fact. So I was very young, but I was at home watching, and then I remember when, like the goals, and I remember Maradona being sent off, kicking Batista, and Flamengo fans of Zico was like my hero, and then he scored, and that was a great match. But more recently, I think I remember as well the one that John mentioned, when Tulio is the name of the guy that he scored against Argentina using his hand.
That was the hand of God for us.
Copa America.
In the Copa America 95, it was the hand of the devil. That Tulio scored with a blatant handball. It was, I was in disbelief. I couldn't believe that. But, well, we won it in 86. We lost it in 95. It's okay.
Well, I think it was just a semi-final Copa America. It's not and Brazil didn't even win that competition. And Tulio, well, just Brazilians and Argentinians remember him. And I would say that one good one was the Copa America with Adriano scoring in the like dying moments in the injury time, and to take the match to penalties. That was It was fantastic. Brazil was playing obviously the B side, and then was you know the commentator, I think Seba lived in Brazil. He knows about Galvão Bueno. This guy is like the you know the most famous commentator. He was the one. And is his voice that when Brazil won the World Cup in '94 and then the 2002. It's his voice that's there. So he was already with the those. Well, that discourse that, oh, but it's a new generation, and then, well, it's not a problem to, you know, to face Argentina, it's a great team, and 2-1, we are playing almost with the B-side, and blah, blah, blah. He's probably 50 minutes just with excuses, and then he probably didn't know what to say when Brazil managed to win that match, because he was, okay, I'm going to say now. And it was, I'm sure you don't agree with me, but it was a fantastic match.
Well, I knew from the moment, I knew when Colaccini let Adriano control the ball and he scored, I knew we were going to lose it on penalties. And I remember just a couple of minutes before Adriano scored, I remember D'Alessandro and I think it was Tevez as well, they were taking the ball towards the corner flag, trying to waste some time instead of trying to attack, and I was thinking to myself, what are you doing? This is Brazil. You don't waste time. You go and try to attack and score another because one goal is no difference. And then we had what we deserve because then Brazil equalized. They wanted it more, and then they defeated us on penalties. And the following Copa America has to be my worst memory because strictly talking about football is not the one that hurt me the most because it's a Copa America, you know, it's important, but sometimes it's not as important as other matches. But it hurt me the most because I was living in Brazil at the time, and we already had Mundo Albiceleste going on. So I knew that a lot of our readers were sad that day. They were angry. They were sad. And it was me who had to put the face the following day. So a couple of my friends, one of them being Rafael, painted my face in yellow and green. So, well, that has to be my worst memory. Not only because of the result or the way we played, but because of what happened to me afterwards. So
I thought you mentioned, no one mentioned the last Confederations Cup. I wonder why.
Yeah, well, that hurt a little bit more when you talk about footballing reasons and the importance of the defeat. I think that was much more important than the Copa America itself. And yeah, that was a horrible game. That was a horrible. I was in London at the time and I was watching on television and I couldn't believe we were completely destroyed and everything the Brazilians were hitting, they were finding the back of the net, especially in the first few minutes. Kaká, Adriano scoring from outside the box. It was a nightmare. It was a complete nightmare. It was like the Italy 90 match should have been, but it wasn't that time. So
so there you have it. Some great and bad or worst memories from myself, Seba and Rafael. So, of course, it's now your turn. So, we'd like to hear from you guys, you know, what is your best ever memory in El Clasico? The comment section is there for you guys. So, let us know.
Let's talk a little bit about World Cup news. And even though we have to wait to know whether Argentina will go to the World Cup and who's going to go to the World Cup from South America. It's on John's turf. I thought we should ask him about the nations that have qualified from Asia to the next World Cup. What can you tell us about that?
Well, what can you say about football in Asia? I mean, it's more or less what we expected, especially from Japan and South Korea. I know, I think a lot of, they were quite the favorites, I would say, to make it to the World Cup. And Australia was, quite a surprise because I think a lot of football fans or even pundits in Asia were thinking, what was their real motive to leave Oceania and join Asia? Was it because of the automatic berth in the World Cup, or was it because they underestimated and they think it's easier to qualify from here? Well, I guess they learned their lesson in the Asian Cup in 2007, and this time around in the main qualifying round, they were pretty impressive. You know, they scored 12 goals, conceded one, unbeaten, you know, going to tough places like Bahrain, Qatar, or Uzbekistan, getting wins out of there. But I guess the most surprising is North Korea. And the last time North Korea was in a World Cup is something that I suppose that no football fans will ever forget. And I don't think it's a, and I do think it's a World Cup that even Rafael would not want to remember the most. And yeah, they were the most surprising thing. And for me, I think it's a good thing to see them there, because we've been hearing a lot of things that are coming out from North Korea. And I think for once, people can forget about all that and say, you know what, they have a good football team, you know. So let's talk about their football. But for now, there's nothing much I can say about them, because just like the country itself, you know, it's pretty much closed door. There's not many players or personnel that we can actually discuss at the moment. We'll have to wait for that until 2010. But I guess the biggest disappointment is not being able to see Iran in the World Cup, because to me, I think if there's a team in Asia that I would like to promote to someone from Brazil or Argentina when it comes to attractive and attacking football, I would always put Iran as my favorites, because they are such a wonderful team to watch. But unfortunately, they won't be there this time. So all it's left is between Bahrain and Saudi Arabia, in which they will have to play a playoff, and the winner will face New Zealand.
And what about Bahrain? They are a very tiny country, and they don't have a lot of tradition, but and they don't even have this, because you think of Qatar or Saudi Arabia and you already think about big leagues or big money leagues. And it's obvious that they have the financial support behind them, and they are starting to bring some young players up. And in the case of Saudi Arabia, they even have a lot of experience in previous World Cups. But Bahrain, this is the first time they will be able to get to the World Cup. And what are their chances?
Well, actually, this is not the first time that Bahrain are getting their chance to play in the World Cup. In fact, in 2006, they were only like 90 minutes away from qualifying. They surprised the Trinidad and Tobago in their own territory by coming away with a 1-1 draw, but only to lose at home.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Still, yeah. Sorry. I was just saying that I remember that. Yeah. They were very close.
Yeah. But I would still say for this match, I think Saudi Arabia might have that certain edge to qualify from this round. But the thing is about me is that I'm not really a big fan of football, the way it is run in the Middle East. I mean, you're talking about a Roman Abramovich running the whole country. They don't seem to have trust on their coach, and the expectation is extremely high. You know, it's like their coach was none other than Carlos Alberto Parreira, who 4 years ago was a World Cup winner with Brazil. After losing to Denmark and France, they sacked him immediately. You know, it's always been the case with the Middle East football. They have the money to develop, you know, grassroots level, you know, amazing infrastructure. But somehow or other, the mentality of having to put some faith in their coach on a long-term basis as compared to other nations like South Korea or Japan is not there. And I remember how the money is actually killing the game, because there was this news about one particular player many years back where two Saudi Arabian football clubs were trying to fight off each other to sign him, and they ended up paying almost like £13 million just to sign that player. You know, I think it's quite ridiculous from Asian monetary point of view.
Okay, Rafael has left the building. He had to return to his normal life. And so we are here with John to discuss in our last segment to talk a little bit about the transfer market and the rumors involving some Argentine players and some of the transfers that are already confirmed. What do you have to say about our new goalkeeper, Mariano Andújar?
Well, I'm just reading this article from goal.com that says that he signed for Catania, and I would say it's not a bad move. I mean, Catania, they were quite pretty okay in Serie A last season, so I think for Mariano to go to a club which is not possibly one of the big clubs in Italy, you know, it might give him that space, that atmosphere for him, you know, that peace of mind. The lack of pressure to perform and those kind of things. And I think he will do well there. You know, I mean, imagine if he was in somewhere like a Juventus or Inter, where the expectation to perform at your very best every weekend, week out, this will not happen for him there. So for me, I think it's a good move and wonderful.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you, and especially for a goalkeeper, when they play in a rather small club, it's better for them because they have a lot of action going on every time they play. And sometimes, if you play for Inter or AC Milan, you get like two or three chances to make a save, and if you fail, there's a lot of pressure on you. And so I think for his confidence and for his career, it's a great move. And because he won't be blamed if they lose a couple of matches here and there, and he'll be very active, and he'll be important for him and for the team, and especially because Catania has a lot of Argentines playing there, so it's a good atmosphere for them that he will find in Catania. So it's a good move for him, and one that could cement his place as our national team number one. So, but let's talk a little bit about more famous names, and they are none other than Carlos Tevez and Sergio Aguero. Let's start with the Apache, and the latest I'm hearing, perhaps when you listen to this podcast, it's already confirmed. But the latest I hear is that Manchester City are favorites to sign him, but there's also an interest from Chelsea. And so at the moment, as we speak, and we're recording this on a Wednesday, there's nothing confirmed yet. And I'm reading some comments from Tevez's agent, the controversial Kia Joravcian, and he's saying that nothing is confirmed. He needs to sit down with Tevez and discuss his future. But apart from the interest from Manchester City and Chelsea, there's nothing else going on. And I don't think. Oh, I don't know about Liverpool. It was mentioned as one of the clubs that had an interest in him, and it could be a case of them losing interest, or they trying to keep it quiet and then announcing a signing next week or in their near future. I don't know about that. And what do you hear about Sergio Aguero, John?
Well, the latest, I wouldn't want to say news, but maybe it's more like rumors, is the fact that Manchester United are willing to pay £60 million to sign Aguero from Atletico Madrid. And I guess a lot of this money must be coming from the transfer from Cristiano Ronaldo. Now, I've seen many of our favorite Argentine players going to Old Trafford. Yeah, one moment they become a fan favorite, the next thing the manager doesn't like them, and I just don't feel it's a good thing for Aguero to leave Atletico Madrid. I think he should still stay at the Madrid-based club because he has built a very a wonderful foundation and a kind of like a great relationship with the fans and around with along with his teammates there. And I think he's more of an icon there. And coming to Manchester United, well, we did touch on that subject earlier. It's a big club. It's a club where it's not like 1 or 2 million people. Watches their matches on TV. It's more like 10 or 20 million people, and the pressure is anonymous. And of course, when you sign a player for that amount of money, it is always like from the word go, you are expected to perform and give a 5-star rating kind of performance. I wouldn't want to see Aguero going there. I would still prefer him to stay at Atletico and where he is right now.
Yeah, well, apparently the player is not thinking the same way you do, because if what he said on television recently as on Tuesday, he said in an interview that he wants to win titles, and he didn't say exactly that at Atletico he won't be able to win titles, but I think he somehow implied that, and he said if a move to another club or another league, it's a good thing for me and the club, then I would be happy to move. And this is just me trying to tell you that the player is not ruling out a move away from Atletico Madrid. I think it's a possibility, it's a good possibility. And I think if Alex Ferguson comes knocking on the door of Atletico and he has the money to buy him, well, I think it's a good possibility for him to move. Another transfer that could be taking place very shortly is that of Lisandro Lopez from Porto to Lyon. Now, the Portuguese want 20 million euros and the French are willing to pay as much as 18. So now they're trying to see if they can make an arrangement and whether they can arrange sort of money or on appearances or bonus or another clause. But it looks like Olympique Lyon is going to bring Lisandro Lopez to the French league. And he, the way I see it is he's going to move to one powerhouse in a second tier league in when it comes to European football, because you have the Premier League, the La Liga, the Serie A, and then one step behind are the Portuguese Superliga, the Ligue 1 of France, and the Bundesliga. That's at least in my opinion. And so he will be moving from one powerhouse in Portugal to another in France. He will still play Champions League football, and maybe the style of play is not that different from Porto to Lyon. So it's not a bad move. It's not a terrific move either, but it's one that will give him another experience and will help him prove himself in a country like France.
And don't forget, Seba, there is also rumors has it that both Marseille and Olympique Lyon are in the run to secure the service of Lucho Gonzalez. And I think it's, well, from Lyon's point of view, you know, if they're going to get Lisandro Lopez, might as well they also try to get Lucho Gonzalez. And because those two guys were a brilliant combination throughout their times in Porto. And I think Lyon could be able to afford that his service because of the other rumors that we have been hearing about Karim Benzema almost could be on his way to the English Premier League to play for Manchester United. And I think Lyon are also eager to revive back their fortunes after having lost the league title to Bordeaux last season. And I'm sure there is a plenty of motivation behind this team to regain themselves back as France number one. So that's going to be that's another rumors in the transfer market that I've been hearing.
Perfect. And I think with that we can close another chapter and we can bring this new edition of Mundo Albiceleste podcast to an end. I hope you had enjoyed the show, and even though we don't have any upcoming matches, apart from the friendlies that I forgot to mention, that but of course we always keep on posting the news on Mundo Albiceleste. It's worth a mention that we are going to play, Argentina is going to play New Zealand the 9th of July, the Independence Day in Argentina, in a match that's going to be played at Cordoba. And then, of course, we have the 12th of August fixture, friendly match against Russia in Moscow. And we're looking forward for both of those matches before we take on Brazil. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you, John, for being here and for your views and comments.
Yeah, thank you, Seba. And just a special note to this email that we received from this guy called Ziggy. I mean, we don't know from where you are, but thanks for the email. I mean, it was very, very in-depth and pretty much, well-equipped with all your points there about the current status of our national team and your opinion about how we should improve. And we appreciate that. And we also like to hear more from you guys. So drop us a line, send us an email at argentina.correspondent@gmail.com. And last but not least, thanks to Rafael for being a guest in our show. And we will hope to hear from you guys in the future. And as we say in Malaysia, selamat tinggal and jumpa lagi.
Okay, whatever that means, I agree with that, and I also would like to say thanks to everyone, and especially for to Sigi, and it's a good thing that you mentioned him. He is from Lebanon, and I think we have a lot of people reading and listening from Lebanon, as our very own Roy, who is enjoying his family vacations there in his home country, and we also like to take the opportunity to say hello to him and wish him well, and tell him that we're waiting for him to come back here to Mundo Albiceleste. So keep your views and comments coming, and thank you again for listening. Vamos, Argentina.
Vamos.